In April of 2020, the unemployment rate in Syracuse, New York spiked to an unheard of 17%.
I think that it's been widely covered and widely understood that there is a staffing shortage.
The nature of work is changing. The pandemic has made a lot of people do remote work.
The facts, the figures, the stories of our community.
We're looking at ourselves as a city and ourselves as workers in a different way.
This is City Limits, a working dilemma.
This is City Limits, a working dilemma. I'm Scott Willis. The nonprofit human services agencies that serve Central New York's most vulnerable residents are among those hit hardest by the labor shortage. The work can be difficult but rewarding, and usually at low pay and odd hours. The months following the worst of the pandemic made it even more challenging to retain and recruit workers. So what does this mean for those who count on the agencies and their staffs for the very programs that might enable them to find and keep a job, take care of their families, and maybe get out of poverty? In a previous episode, we heard how a factory, home health care agency, and a hospitality workers union are coping with the labor shortage. Today, we check in with three agencies to find out how they've weathered the tight labor market and what they're doing to attract and keep employees.
I'm sorry to bother you, Miss Jeannie.
You're okay.
Are you doing your story time?
Yeah.
Iris, come on back. Come on over here, Iris.
It's story time in one of the toddler classrooms at the Salvation Army's daycare program on South Salina Street.
Are we ready to listen, Miss Iris?
This is a new story Miss Jeannie has.
Oh, what are we reading today?
But you gotta wait a minute, 'cause I forgot to get my glasses.
Jeannie gonna read a story.
This is one of four toddler rooms and one of eight classrooms total in the early childhood education program. Director Chandra Smith says in all they have about 60 to 70 children enrolled, ranging in age from 6 weeks to 5 years, but they have room for about 125.
We're 58% full, so we're hoping with some new teachers applying that we can expand. Like right now, we have a whole center that's not open yet. It's next door and it has six classrooms, so we could take up to 44 more infants and toddlers. So we really need teachers to apply so that we can open those rooms and get the babies in. We have about 20 on the wait list, so parents are waiting.
Smith says they've lost four teachers in the past 6 months, which means they can't take on as many children.
It's worse now because we have the parents wanting to bring their children back and we don't have the staff. And we've listened to our partners in the community. A lot of centers have closed. They're operating, you know, at low capacities just like us if they are open. So it's like not just our program, it's a community-wide issue with staff shortages for teachers and childcare programs.
We have classrooms that we could open up, but we need to find teachers who have the right credentials to be able to do that. In daycare, we typically would not have a wait list because we would be able to have our centers fully staffed.
Linda Lopez is the Salvation Army's Executive Director for Community Services. In addition to the daycare, the organization operates four shelters, four residential programs, as well as a food pantry. She says they stayed open throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, but Lopez says the job market has changed in the past year.
We did not have high turnover during COVID. It's really as wages have escalated in the market, and where now nonprofits are competing with the general market, it has been more challenging.
She acknowledges that pre-COVID, people weren't lining up at the doors to work at nonprofits anyway due to lower wages. But Lopez says the meaningful work usually balances that out. Now, she says, inflation and higher wages in other sectors means employees are making difficult choices.
Most of our employees who have left have gone because they felt like the wage difference between what they could earn in a nonprofit and what they could earn in a for-profit kind of setting was enough to really make a difference for their family.
Lopez says it's often a gut-wrenching decision.
I can't tell you how many employees, they cry when they leave. They hand in their resignation because they feel like they need to make that choice for their family, and they cry at the table because they don't want to leave the work.
So what can be done to keep those dedicated employees or attract new ones? Lopez says the Salvation Army normally has a staff of about 225, but there are roughly 40 open full and part-time positions. She says they've raised wages, remitted tuition, and offer a generous benefit package. But Lopez says there can still be barriers for certain positions.
Get your twinkles. Twinkle, twinkle,
twinkle,
twinkle, twinkle, twinkle, little star. How I wonder what you are.
It is often challenging to staff the early education centers because there's a credential that's required.
But they're even making that requirement more attainable.
If someone wants to apply and they have experience, they have a love for children, and they don't have the credential right away, we can work with them.
That's Chandra Smith again, Director of Early Childhood Education Services.
We can get them into a Child Development Associate credential right away. It's within the first year of their hire, they would have that certification. So throughout that first year, we'll pair them with a veteran teacher. We'll make sure they are able to get into a class once a week to do the coursework. And we pay for all that.
But the challenge of hiring people for specialized jobs at a nonprofit has far deeper roots. Linda Lopez says it starts with education.
Yeah, there's not a lot of high schoolers that are being challenged to think about human services as a career. And so we're not creating that early pipeline of try this. And this is really rewarding work because what they hear is, boy, you're not going to make a lot of money here. And if you go into another field, you can make twice that. So I think the pipelines from high school into the field, from college into the field, are getting tighter. And so that means at the end, the nonprofits don't have as many people coming into the field.
She says that creates a critical problem for all agencies and the people who rely on them.
We need to pay attention to the human services sector as a community and make sure we have a really robust network of human services in this community that has been built over time. And so there's lots of supports for people to thrive in our community that other places don't have. And we don't want that to dwindle away because there is no workforce.
The CYO Center on North Salina Street in Syracuse is buzzing with activity.
It's kind of a meeting grounds for our healthcare navigators and our case managers meet clients here. So this floor is always really busy and people are here not only getting services but sometimes just to hang out and meet friends.
Felicia Castor-Cohn is the program officer for Refugee Resettlement Services at Catholic Charities.
In the kitchen today is our youth program staff. They're going to be selling dinners at our main office building that the refugee girls group made. So doing a little fundraiser, yeah.
In just about every corner of every floor of the sprawling center, someone is doing something critical to serve the needs of refugees. But it hasn't always been smooth sailing for Catholic Charities. It's more than 300 employees and the 10,000 people they serve per year.
I feel like I'm going to break into a cold sweat trying to answer it. It's been a tough couple of years.
Executive Director Michael Malara.
Nobody comes to Catholic Charities because they're having a good day. So people come to us because they're in crisis. They need food. They need to be relocated from their homes. We have refugees who are coming to us who are starting a new life.
Malara says they absolutely want and need to be there for the area's most vulnerable.
When you run an agency, there's a lot of things that keep you up at night. For the past couple years, probably the 3 o'clock in the morning wake-up call that I get in my mind is, are we sufficiently staffing our programs that run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? And top of that list is our emergency shelter for men. And it's the one program where we have our highest turnover rate and most difficult to fill positions there. Running a 24/7 program, it's like pass fail. Either you run it all the time, but you can't shut it down. We can't just, hey, we're going to shut the shelter down for a couple weeks till we get our... No, it doesn't work that way.
He says the good news is they've been able to provide all their services throughout the pandemic, especially emergency services such as the shelter and food pantries.
We never missed a beat, but the labor shortage has for sure had a huge impact on us and our ability to stretch ourselves super thin to meet the needs of folks who are really struggling.
Malara says they look at three key indicators to know how they're doing. First, the 12-month turnover rate. It more than doubled from 18% in 2019 to 40% in 2021. Second, the retention rate. It dipped from 82% before the pandemic to 67% last year. Third, how long it takes to fill a position jumped from 55 days to 80.
The remaining staff who are working in these really critical programs, our shelters, our, you know, emergency services, they end up having to work more hours. There's more overtime. There's more fatigue. There's more stress. All those things, you know, they're a multiplier effect for the folks that are here day in and day out. But there's better news for us. I mean, things are improving.
Remember that 40% turnover rate last year? It's now down to 14%, below industry standard. The time needed to fill a position is down from 80 days to 65, still above where they were pre-pandemic, but clearly going in the right direction. How did they do it? Malara says it was a very intentional, multi-pronged approach. They issued significant salary increases, absorbed higher health insurance costs, offered flexible schedules, handed out referral and sign-on bonuses, and boosted their mileage reimbursement rate, just to name a few.
We recognize that the status quo, the way we're handling, you know, the pandemic and the labor shortage was just not working. And we put together this plan. We've been happy about this plan. It seems like this plan is producing the desired outcome. Our vacancy rate is going down. I think our retention rate will improve. We haven't quite rounded the corner yet, but the wheel is turning.
Yeah, New York Bakery, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know the name of the
wall. I think it's New York Bakery. That's the one.
Back at the CYO, Felicia Castricone says they've seen results.
It was a little bit of a challenge, I would say a year ago, when we would advertise a position. We weren't getting very many resumes. Now it's better. Definitely the last couple of jobs that we've posted, we have gotten a decent amount of resumes, and we're able to hire people pretty quickly.
She says there's also very little turnover at the CYO, which keeps operations stable. For his part, Michael Malara might not be losing as much sleep these days because he feels they're in a good place for now.
I would not want to leave your listeners with any type of impression that somehow we've got this thing totally knocked. The labor shortage can twist and turn, and we can find ourselves again, you know, needing to take extraordinary steps. But as we sit here today, we feel optimistic, and we remain incredibly committed to anybody who walks through the front door of Catholic Charities. We want to be ready and able to serve them, and I think the community expects that, the people we serve expect that, and the leadership here at Catholic Charities expects to fulfill that.
Hey, James, how long has Fremont been here?
About almost like 12 years ago, something like that. Oh, wow. So it's been over a decade, yeah.
It's fairly quiet right before lunch at Ark of Onondaga's Dayhab program in Fremont.
Actually, we started with 14 individuals, now we're up to 24. Staff, we went from 2 to, now we got 7 altogether.
Oh, okay.
So the more staff we get, the more individuals we can bring back.
Program manager Robert Zudi Lewis says they've been slowly ramping up operations again after reopening last August. There are still a number of empty rooms at the center.
So once the rooms are filled, we should have 12 staff and 40 individuals. Wow. So that's the goal. That's what we've been working towards consistently.
Our day programs are still down in staff because we focused on residential first. We had to get them stabilized.
Ellen Gutmaker is Ark of Onondaga's executive director. Like the Salvation Army and Catholic Charities, it's been a challenge for Ark to fill positions as the pandemic waned and qualified workers became scarce.
We're now bringing staff into Dayhab and to our community support setting, and we're able to bring more people back to program. So we are definitely seeing a turnaround there.
She hopes to have everyone who relied on those supports back in a program by midsummer. But she says it's been difficult to maintain a staff of about 400 to meet the needs of anywhere between 700 and 800 people with developmental disabilities.
Last year was probably even tougher than most of 2020. So when things started reopening, and other companies started reopening, and we were able to reopen some of our programs, we were unable to get the staff to do it. You also saw a lot of businesses raising their starting salaries. I'd drive past a place that was $20 an hour, and we can only afford to pay the people that we employ based on the funding that we receive. And this field has gone without adequate investment for a long, long time. So the pandemic really exposed that crisis and that lack of investment.
And Guttmacher says the instability in the workforce means it's hard on those they serve.
When I think about turnover rates or I think about challenges filling positions, I get concerned about the impact that that's having on the population that we have because they see so many different faces and they rely on people who know them and people that they can trust.
She says the lack of investment combined with larger market forces is demoralizing for an industry that provides such personal care for some of the community's most vulnerable residents.
To not even be able to pay comparable wages to fast foods or retail settings, it hurt. It really hurt in 2021. And even now, we are not fully open because we are not fully staffed.
It's not for a lack of trying. A banner on their website advertises a $3,500 signing bonus for registered nurses. And Guttmacher says last November, the board of directors approved a request to increase starting salaries.
If we had not done that, I don't know where we would be. We were really spinning our wheels last fall in trying to recruit. We couldn't hire staff. We weren't getting the caliber of people perhaps that we would want to have working in this field. And the board approved an increase in starting wages as well as for our existing staff. And that helped. Our applicants went up. I think in a six-week period, we had 100 applications, as opposed to the prior 6 months where we hadn't even had 100 applications.
Back at ARC's Fremont Dayhab program, Robert Zudi Lewis is doing his part to attract potential coworkers.
Just putting the word out, and when people apply, we get a lot of people that apply through Indeed. Just because I post on my Facebook wall and how much I love my job, then I get people saying, I'm looking for a job. Tell me more about ARC. And it's really cool because it's just, you know, we always promote ourselves, you know, and I love what I do. So here I am.
Right. For City Limits, A Working Dilemma, I'm Scott Willis.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. You can find more about the project and listen to archived episodes at citylimitsproject.org.